This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever in the world you may be listening to my voice. Welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. This is Rick Chicago. Many of you know me by the name of Earth Play. You can join us in our live interactive auditorium at paltalk.com in the special interest category in the People Speak Radio program. People Speak Radio program is every Tuesday, as you well know, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night. Be here. Tonight's content could be a little bit more disturbing to some individuals, so I'd like to start with a little bit of a disclaimer. If you suffer from mental illness and or depression, please be advised tonight's show is going to be disturbing. My best advice to you is splash some water on your face, sit down, relax, and try to attempt to understand what we're talking about. The topics that we talk about in my programming are real and tangible news and information that you don't hear about in mainstream media. And I always run out of time in this show, always. It's just one of those hazards. So before the show starts, I want to give a special thanks to Doug and Don and Mike. Thank you so much for this opportunity, my producers and the people, the engineers and the people that run the BBSRadio.com network. Thank you so much. And my appreciation to our room admins, Love is Light, Nephilim 70, Peace Lover, and Orangutan. Tonight, we were going to have Lorraine Moray online with us, a geoscientist, independent geoscientist, and whistleblower, but she will not be able to make it with us here tonight. However, the show will go on. I have a friend of Lorraine's on with tonight. His name is Lawrence Battis, and we're just going to kind of ad-lib this show since the script will be of absolutely no use to us tonight. Welcome to the People Speak Radio program, Lawrence.
Hello, Rick. It's great to be here.
Great, man. Last-minute fill-in. Appreciate it so much. You know, I want to go in a lot of directions, and I was going to go with Lorraine. And I'm going to tell you my 10 topics and subjects, and then I'm just going to kind of jump in here and see how you feel about these things. Number 10 on my list is mankind, nuclear war, pandemics, and crossing global boundaries. Number 9 is, well, of course, the nuclear industry, Fukushima, and nuclear radioactive contaminated sites, Superfund sites all over the world, 800 of them just right here in America alone. Number 8 is the methane hydrates and methane catharates that are being released and worldwide degassing going on in our atmosphere right now, causing horrific climate and global weather changes, including the jet stream, and that's another one of the topics. Number 7, volcanic and earthquake activity, geo disasters up 400% in the last decade over the entire last century. All of these topics are vetted, and we can sure talk about them. The migrating poles, magnetic field strength, and the condition of the magnetic pole strength today. Number 5, our rapid global climate change, which kind of puts all of these things, and specifically when we were given a 500-day climate warning from the UN back in September. Number 4, geoengineering, chemtrailing, global dimming. Number 3, the production of our food, Monsanto's, GMOs, and the diminishing areas where our crops are being able to be grown because of the climate changes. Number 2, the state of our global oceans and global waters. And I want to talk about this a little bit more because we apparently have dropping fresh water tables all over the world. Water tables are just dropping, plummeting, while at the same time, our scientists, so-called scientists and experts, are telling us that the oceans are rising. Well, as a student of fluid dynamics, I know that when you have rising ocean levels, you're also going to have rising water tables in lakes and streams, and more water is pushed towards the surface. And my number one, my number one topic is the sixth major extinction crisis, animal deaths and the food chain, anthropogenic climate change, probably all wrapped up into one. But those are basically the topics that I like to cover in these shows. So, Lawrence, I want to start off with you in Fukushima, and then we're going to work ourselves across through the oceans, across the continent, and then I'm going to take you for a hard left turn and go straight up into space. So, Fukushima, what do you think about what's going on there? Do you have any latest updates, or and have we seen the worst of Fukushima, do you think?
Oh, we haven't come close to seeing the worst of Fukushima, Rick. Let me give you just a quick bit of background. I am the publisher and editor of Loren's website, lorenmurray.info. I'm also the producer of Loren's videos. Now, getting back to Fukushima, no. They have got a nuclear pile, more than one actually, many, that have burnt through all containment. They're underneath the actual buildings. They're in the earth. They're in the groundwater in the earth, which is a major problem I'll get to in a minute. But let's talk about how that's geologically comprised first.
Okay.
Japan is sitting at the intersection of four separate fault lines. So when you get that kind of pressure and you have those sorts of geological events over extended periods of time, you get portions of the earth, portions of the mantle up here, that get turned up onto their sides.
Deformation. Deformation.
Lots of Japan is like that.
Right.
And all of Fukushima. So here you have something that is geologically on its side. In other words, all of the layers are vertical. So the ability to travel becomes much easier. You don't have to actually go through a layer. You're going between them. It's much easier. So you have that going against you as far as the passage of groundwater goes. You have these nuclear piles in two instances that I'm aware of. It's MOX fuel, which is a combination of both plutonium and uranium.
That's military-grade fuel, right?
This is a reprocessing product that they needed to commercialize. And so they put it together with uranium, and it's a marvelous new fuel. It has better duration, better heat properties, yada, yada, yada. Well, there's something that's known as the eutectic. Eutectic has to do with what are the melting points when you start to make alloys of metals.
Yeah,
so you have each metal, and each metal has its characteristics.
Right.
But when you put them together, that changes.
Right, the physics change.
The physics changes completely, and it's this particular phenomenon is called the eutectic, and it has to do with what point things will start to melt, things will start to get out of hand and ultimately go critical. And the melting point, when you mix the two together, uranium and plutonium, actually takes a severe dip. And so they're trying to run power plants that are made for uranium, they're made for a certain temperature, and they've retrofitted them. And they're trying to be running this particular fuel in them, but they don't even have the right procedures in place. So it becomes very, very easy to have an accident because the actual margin for safety, that temperature band that you need to keep it inside of, is much smaller than what it is they think it is.
So what is the current state of Fukushima? Do you have any kind of readings of the contamination of the sieverts or of just what's being released there currently, still 5 years down the line?
Yeah. Every time we get any kind of a new set of reports, and reports are getting fewer and further between.
Yes.
They're trying to go lights out on all information there. But one of the more interesting ones that came across my desk in the last 6 months was discharge of groundwater. Now, when you've got a nuclear pile going critical and it's sitting 45, 50, good question, feet below the containment wall of the buildings, it has to release its fresh radionuclides, its product, somewhere. It releases them into the water, and the water takes them out to the Fukushima harbor. And a number that I saw go past me from a reasonably credible source was 3 trillion newly made radionuclides per cubic meter, which is a lot.
So is it fair to say that there is open air nuclear fusion still occurring at Fukushima?
Well, when you get down there, what you have is hydroclastic reactions. It's sitting down and it has a jacket of water around it. Every so often, the pressures get so high that you have an explosion on top of everything else that's happening in that particular set of processes.
That's a steam explosion. You call that a hydro what?
Clastic.
Hydroplastic, like a pyroplastic.
C-L-A-S-T-Y-I-C.
Right, okay. And then now the containment, but I talked to Arne Gunderson just recently, and he told me that all of the corium, all the material that was in the cores, have likely leaked out and are forming now what is called an elephant's foot.
Absolutely.
For those of you concerned about a China syndrome, the nuclear cores melting into the core of the Earth and causing a pyroclastic, or not pyroclastic, a magma release of epic proportions. It doesn't look like we're moving in that direction. But
no.
They still have no containment over the nuclear fission that could still be going on there. Or the release of the materials, the ice wall is completely failed.
It didn't have any chance of doing anything except failing. It was pretty
cosmetic.
When
they first did that, Lawrence, they were saying that nuclear water does not freeze.
Yeah, that's also true. And then there's heat and there's pressure and there's temperatures down there. They were making assumptions about where the elephant's foot would form.
Right.
There's all kinds of things that they got wrong, especially when they're dealing with this very hot fuel.
And they still don't
a little
even
bit
know
earlier.
It has formed into an elephant's foot yet? Do they even know that?
Well, as I was saying, it's down in the earth. It definitely forms an elephant's foot. It accrues material around itself. It just does it. And it can burn
as
through
it melts in the fission around it, right? As it burns into the earth.
Yes, it's a kind of debris burnt to it, and
right.
They have got that. They found out about it at Chernobyl. That was where they took the first pictures of an elephant's foot and things. But even those continue moving. That's what the trick is there. I mean, it's not like it was static. It just went into slow motion.
Right. And all of this is ending up in the Pacific Ocean. I've talked to Professor James McCanny, Guy McPherson, many others, Paul Beckwith. Boy, there are so many people on this that it is now becoming bioaccumulative, and it's being absorbed by all the plant life and by the fish and being carried away by other organisms, the wind and the water. And they describe this as a plume that is in the water. Can you talk
a
little more about
that? Yes, it is. And it is airborne and it is seaborne. And the seaborne does become airborne and then rains back out again. It's a cycle. All of it's a cycle. when you get to get it over land, you need it airborne at that time, and then it rains out later. Or in snow, it's even worse. Snow is the most radiation accumulative material you can put in the air in order to bring radiation out of it. It grabs about 95% of its surface.
Now, I wonder how much of this is contributing to the auroral changes that we're having and pressures in atmospherics, charged particles. Now, there's a lot of charged particles obviously being released and being put up into our atmosphere. How much do you think that that's playing with the atmospherics? I don't expect you to know the answer, but is there enough of that material up there for there to be auroral changes and lightning and highly charged particles up there in the atmosphere playing havoc with our environment?
Well, there's a lot more up there than just that, and it's been going on for a lot longer than just now. And in point of fact, part of the reason for having the space program was because what they wanted to do was they wanted to ionize the upper atmosphere, the stratosphere. And they wanted to do that in order to do further experiments as they were moving forward with HARP transmission.
So they have, has this been part of the for lack of a better word, the military-industrial complex, when they started blowing off atomic and hydrogen bombs at a rate of once a week in the South Pacific and just kind of all over the globe? Well, were they thinking about these things specifically back then?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a part of the reason for doing high air bursts also. They were thinking about all of those things, and they did all of those things. They did more than all of those things. The most nuclearly attacked, the most bombed nation on the earth is the United States of America. We have had so many above-ground tests. Every one of them is a nuclear attack. We have had more above-ground nuclear explosions than any place else on the planet.
Lawrence, let me ask you this. And I ask this of a lot of people, and I get different questions or answers from everybody. But is it fair for me to tell people out there in our audience and in our chat rooms that for the rest of our lives, every other raindrop or snowflake that falls out of the sky is going to be radioactive to some degree? Would that be fair to tell people?
It's not at all unfair. We do make a point out of trying to stay out of the rain. When we have to be out in it, we make a point out of large umbrellas and shoes that are appropriate to that particular weather. It's not something you want to go crossing on a regular basis. Now, as far as it goes, there are physiological things that you can do that aid in mitigating effects. One of them, one of the really large ones, is keeping your body saturated with iodine. It's very important. It displaces cesium. And that's the first thing that you have to do, because that's the product that shows up the most. It does many other things. There are also other nutrients, calcium, for instance. There are things that you want to have in your body so that your body isn't feeling starved for those things, because what happens is that each of these isotopes that there are, and there are many of them, radioactive isotopes, it will mimic some one of these metals. And so if the body finds it available, the body will absorb it, at which point you carry it until it's finished discharging. That's what you don't want to do. You want to pass this stuff through your body, which is why you also want to drink a lot of fluids. But you have to be careful about that also, and careful about what you have in your fluids. The best one's obviously water, but for that type of a situation, you still need to remove all of the various chemistries that we have in the water now, and the radiation, both of those things. And the only one that I know, filter, that does this well is the reverse osmosis, and the only other process that really works is distilling.
And James McCanney sells those. So for those of us who like to take long walks with our girlfriend in the rain, or snow enthusiasts spending a lot of time building snowmen, that activity is starting to become more and more risky, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I've
I'm gonna put words in your mouth, Lawrence.
You're not putting any words in my mouth. I have a proclivity for the water. I spent 3 years and 4 months on the ocean. I'm a deep water sailor. I was figured I'd be back on the ocean in my retirement. I'm in no way, shape, or form back on the ocean, and don't go that close to it very often. It's not safe. But the strangest thing about all of this is dilution factors. For as much garbage as has been dumped into the oceans, and it's been dumped into the oceans programmatically, I mean, as part of some program or another for research purposes or more nefarious purposes, since the 1950s, since Sellafield, that's when they started their real big ocean experiments. For all of that garbage that they've thrown in the oceans, it's what comes back out again and goes into the freshwater. That's where the real concentrations are. And it's a little difficult to explain, but it has to do with the fact that there's less fresh water for all of this radiation to hit at one time, so it can't disperse it as far. And that's why it's more concentrated in the fresh.
Okay, let's change directions here just a little bit. What do you think about chemtrailing, geoengineering, Monsanto's food shortages? Let's talk about the state of our food supply, Monsanto's, and what's going on there. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the state of our food supply is dismal. What is Monsanto actually doing? What they've done is they've created a cycle of soil addiction, farm addiction. That cycle has to do with starting to use their product, which preclude you from using other products. Now, the problem with that has to do with the fact that their products were designed in order to defeat certain biological adversaries who adapt over time. I mean, what they're trying to do is beat evolution with chemistry, and it's not the right way to go. But so what happens is you get caught up in a vicious cycle of, okay, we need to up our game now. Now,
well,
your seeds, yeah?
Are we getting any actual vitamins or minerals or benefits from GMO food?
I'm not aware of any instance of a GMO food being superior to what was previously grown where it's being grown now, no. I mean, can you get a higher soy output? Well, yes, but over the long term, no. And as I say, they're in this rat race, and they're in this rat race with poisons. Now, the latest insult, there's a soft chemical, quote-unquote, that Monsanto just came out with. It's actually more of a process of application for some new seeds that it has, because, as I say, they had to up their game.
The Terminator seeds.
Yeah, but Monsanto did a really dirty thing. They released the seeds a year before they released their new softer product, and they let these farmers in on the secret that the old product would work with the new seeds. Okay, the old product costs less than the new product. Which one do you think will be used?
The cheaper one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's where the problem is right there. And that brings us to the question of why would an organization like Monsanto set up a dynamic for an entire year, for a full cycle of growing seasons, where it lets farmers know that they can use the old poisons with the new product, and that the newer, safer poisons, more expensive, higher profit margin.
So they're basically doing what the computing world is doing, making you upgrade, continually upgrade, get the add-ons, the firewalls, the protections, and they're doing the same thing with the plants? upgrading it, so they're forcing
It's more like the race that humans have with antibiotics against diseases. It's really much more that particular cycle. The more you up the antibiotics game, the more the diseases up their game.
Gotcha. Now,
adaptation.
Chemtrailing, just geoengineering, is this contributing to Monsanto's making them more aluminum resistant, or are they two different things? Are they compatible with one another? Are they two different agendas? What's going on?
I think that the bug spray that's being spewed from this vast fleet of various types of jets isn't exactly Monsanto's baby. Monsanto has its gig. This gig is military, very military in nature. As a matter of fact, the unmarked Dreamliners, they fly out of Edwards Air Force Base.
Where is that, California?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And they are finding ways of making the chemtrailing less obvious. It's interesting. I've been watching the evolution of this in the San Francisco Bay Area. Oh, geez, for 6-7 years now. From back where you were hearing rumors and occasionally seeing something a little bit strange to essentially now. Most of it happens offshore, and most of it happens in hours of other than daylight for a bulk of the things that they're doing. Then it comes in off of the ocean during the day, but they also have specific applications kinds of things. I've got multiple motions of video sequences and still shots of all different sorts of chemtrailing.
Is there a place we can see that, Lawrence?
Is there a way you can see it? Certainly. Go to the website lorenmorais.info, for instance. There's lots of it in some of our YouTubes. There's a bit about chemtrailing there, a lot more about the nuclear industry and the geopolitics of what's going on in the Ukraine and the Middle East, those types of things.
Okay, well, we're going to go there, I hope that our engineer, Don, because they're really busy over there at the studio, is with us. We need to take our one and only break, Lawrence, and when we come back, I want to talk about Israel and what's going on in the Middle East and in Syria. So are our engineers with us, Don?
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Bowser. This is the great BBS Radio.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land as your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Okay, and welcome back to the People Speak radio program. And as you know, every Tuesday night you want to be here, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at the People Speak radio program, bbsradio.com. And of course, in our live interactive chat room at paltalk.com at the People Speak radio show program. Tonight we have Lawrence Buttis with us, who is the technical engineer, web designer, and technical author for Lorraine Moray, who was to be with us tonight, and we'll have to reschedule her for another time. But we have Lawrence with us, and welcome back, Lawrence.
Good to be here, Rick.
It's great to have you here. So we're going to take a hard left turn here, and now I want to try to get into some geopolitics and what's going on around the world. So. And we already have a few questions coming in. So the first one here is from Steve in Australia. And he asks, is Israel our friend?
I don't think Israel is anybody's friend except Israel's.
Okay.
Easiest way of putting it is I think that they were put there by the British. And I think they were put there really in the 19th century. I mean, in the early 20th century, they really put it down in writing and things.
Right.
World War I and World War II were about that realignment, among other things. And it was about setting up a situation where they could divide and conquer. And they've gotten it as far as to actually formally name their program the Middle East North Africa Project, and they're quite literally trying to break down nation states all through the area.
So how do you feel about that, what's going on in the Middle East and how we're dealing with it, how Russia is dealing with it? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wish they would sit down and do the math, but that's not quite the way that they look at it. It becomes a question of what do they actually think they're doing. And I got to tell you, I'm not sure if they're psychopaths, sociopaths, or some rare combination of
both. I think that would put us in the ballpark, Lawrence.
Yeah, but what's happening is that they're playing this international geopolitical game of pitting armies against armies. They create Hegelians and over these Tweedledee, Tweedledum arguments, they attempt to reshape entire areas of the world, entire cultures. They're trying to actually get rid of much of the institutional memory of mankind, and they have been very good at doing it over the years. And right now, as I was saying, their focus is on depopulating the third world in order to take possession of the resources. That's really all that they're interested in. As far as humanity goes, yeah, it's a word in their dictionary, and that's about the size of that.
So you don't think that they're there to set an example to the world how you live with your neighbor in peace and by the rule of law? You're not buying any of that?
I take a look at the results, not the rhetoric, and the results are glaring. If you just turn down the soundtrack for a while and watch the picture.
Right.
It makes no good sense. They waste entire national treasures, and ultimately entire nations, continuing these very, very destructive arguments that they force people into. And they do it. It's so Orwellian. It's such a black is white, white is black. Oh, we've got the responsibility to protect, Samantha Powers says. Well, I say nay. I think, Samantha, what you're really trying to say is we have the requirement to project, and the reason why we have the requirement to project is because we've created our economy in a predatory model.
Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, Lawrence, but are you saying that they're genociding? Is that, I mean, let's use the right term.
Oh, Henry Kissinger has said it. Ted Turner has said it. Bill Gates has said it. Why shouldn't I?
Okay. And what is the, do you have any idea of the current state of, say, the Golan Heights or what's going on in Gaza?
Well, what's happening with Israel and what's happening with Syria and Lebanon. You also have Jordan involved in this equation and obviously Iraq and Turkey. What you have is you have a group of players. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to break up and divide Syria amongst them. The reason why they want this to happen is basically because the Saudis and the Bahrainis are projecting the Wahhabist flavor of Islam, which is in no way, shape, or form that I can see actually Islam. It's just that it's branded as such and giving a bad name to the rest of Islam. These clowns, these, you know, on
psychopaths. Psychopaths?
Well, they're that too, but it really is just the next way of creating a disadvantaged class and sending them to war. Yeah, that's pretty much all they do in Saudi Arabia is manufacture disadvantaged classes and send them to war.
Speaking of Saudi Arabia, Jane in the chat room asks, what about the Saudis? What role do they play in all of this?
Oh, well, the Saudis were playing a key or a pivotal role. They were faced off with the Iranians. They're Sunni. The Iranians are Shiite. The Saudis are Sunni. And it's a battle that goes back to the grandsons of Muhammad is the best way of explaining this one. And it is just another fracture of a culture that happened very young. And so what you have is you have more pragmatic or practical people. They would prefer a peaceful trading existence, but they've been forced to face war, and that would be the Iranians. They've been forced to face war for quite some time. They're balancing off against the Saudis, and the Saudis are financing quite a large portion of this terrorism, ISIS Daesh, all of these proxy armies that they send off.
As well as
practice jihad and create caliphates.
As well as the U.S.?
Oh, the U.S. definitively has a hand in it. They do arm it. They do advise it. They do sell massive quantities of armaments to Saudi Arabia that get channeled in via various routes, including Jordan, as I was alluding to earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have. Go ahead, Lawrence. Did you want to finish your
thought? As far as advanced training goes, the United States was responsible for that. Kind of can take a look at it side by side with Russian advanced training at this point, which is what's going on in Syria. And then as long as you have adequate air cover on the ground, the Syrians are mopping up now.
Okay, and now Panther in the chat room. Is wondering what happens if Russia does gain control. Are they going to gain control there or allow Syria to become independent?
Russia is going to make a vast, vast point out of saying, it looks like our job is finished and going home when it's time to go home. They are not trying to conquer the world. They figured out that they had a problem with that. They had their crisis with empire when the Soviet Union came down. They are smarter than this now. These people learn.
So you would say that maybe Putin right now is probably the only world leader right now that is acting in a moral way? Is that fair?
I believe he's acting in the best interest of Russians, and I believe he's attempting to treat the rest of the world in a fair fashion. It's a situation where, you know, it's a much, much easier and much, much more profitable to get along. But for some people, they don't enjoy anything they haven't stolen.
Do you think that, well, obviously, had that woman, the Wicked Witch of the West, become the president of our nation, which I still shudder even at the thought, would have most likely have started a war with Putin over this?
It would be an interesting afternoon in the Oval Office, and I would love to be that proverbial fly on the wall watching the whole thing happen when the Joint Chiefs had to sit down and carefully explain to her that as much as they would like to go beat Russia and China up, if they go over there and actually try to hit them, it's really going to hurt.
Boy, we're running out of time here. Love is Light had a question earlier. What do you know about U.S. government secret government coups or background governments? I don't understand the question.
Oh, shadow governments, the Bilderberg Group, all of this exists. Has this been going on in the United States since before it was the United States? Yes. What we're talking about, I mean, the three secret treaties, for instance, the secret treaties of Vienna, Verona, and Chieri. This is where they made the modern compact that we're actually now living under. I would wholeheartedly recommend you go ahead and look those up. I even can tell you where to find them.
Huh? I can't even pronounce them. Is this stuff available on Lorraine Moray's site?
Yes, it's available on LorraineMoray.info. It is in the Jesuits section under three secret treaties.
Okay, that was LorraineMoray.info?
LorraineMoray.info.
Got it. Thank you. Did you have anything else you wanted to comment on concerning that?
This is all part of something that is actually a deep time situation. It goes back much further than just Vienna and Verona and Chieri. This has been going on. The lights have been continually put out on mankind over time. I mean, instances of this are the sack of the Library of Alexandria, for instance. These types of events have happened many, many times in history. They're actually cyclic in their nature, seem to happen roughly every 1,000 years or so. And what we have is we have the next great upheaval. Right now, in fact, you're watching information disappear while it's all right in front of your eyes simultaneously. The Internet, it's making the physical knowledge. The libraries, they're all contracting, getting smaller. Things are being put more and more into electronics. Well, I'm an information specialist, security specialist, all of those things. And let me tell you something about data. When you get it into a form where you have to have a machine in order to put it back into a form where you can read it, you've become vulnerable in a way. Getting rid of the actual physical data, getting rid of the physical data repositories, is a horrifically bad idea.
Well, I see a lot of my databases falling off the internet, unavailable, a lot of things going on. But I'm going to take you for another turn here, Lawrence, with the couple of minutes that we have remaining here. Have you ever heard of a magnetar that's 50,000 light years away from Earth? It's called SGR 1806. Where are my notes here? -20. And it's apparently shooting a gamma or a photon burst towards the Earth, and there'll be an impact around December 26th of this year. Do you know anything, or have you heard anything about these events? This is concerning Obama's recent executive order released on October the 13th of last month, preparing the nation for space weather events. Do you know anything about this?
Oh.
Thought I would catch you by surprise.
Yeah. No, I don't have any prior knowledge of this. I am taking a look right now at its Wikipedia entry. I would have to do a lot more background research. I'd want to see it in a few more places and explained a little bit better before I started to make any guesses about whether this is being used as a cover story or a disinformation for some event that they have planned in the future, or if this is the event itself.
Well, my first thought was when I saw that executive order, and it just came out last month, is, wow, they're setting us up for a power grid failure.
Yeah.
And on a solar flare when we're in a solar minimum. Any thoughts on that? I know.
Well, they've actually announced right out loud that the grid's vulnerable, and the number of different ways that it's vulnerable. I mean, I could sketch out an attack for you basically just using the Internet of Things, or as I like to call it, the idiot of things. There's no real security out in that particular frontier yet, and it's quite easy to actually take that machinery and bend it to other purposes than it was originally intended.
Yeah, well, you can write this down. The specific event that I'm talking about is a magnetar 50,000 light years away from Earth, so it occasionally sweeps a gamma burst across our solar system, and it's labeled SGR/1806/20, and they're calling this the second wave, so it might be easier to find it by that, but there's very little academic information on the internet, and that's the last place you're going to find real and valid information.
Well, the first place I'm going to go look, Rick, is at IEEE.
IEEE, okay.
IEEE.
Oh, IEEE, okay.
Yeah, that would be the first place I'd poke my nose into. I'm a member. So I'll go ahead and take a look in there and see what they're saying about it. There are some other places I'll have a look. This is interesting.
Okay, and what I'd like for you to do, we're going to try to get Loren on the show, and we'd love to talk to you again, Lawrence. Would you come back and talk to us another time?
Rick, I'd be happy to.
That's great. So, and Loren's site, one more time, does she have any books or videos? Do you have any material that you would like to
point to? The videos, you'll find our YouTube channel and our G+ are listed basically on pretty much every page of the website. Our videos are over on YouTube. They're also highlighted on the website. And we do try and get our information out.
That's great. Thank you so much for being on the show today with us today, Lawrence. And I would like to thank all of our producers and engineers. I know that I don't do this at the end of the show, but I'm going to break with traditions and do it. Thank you so much for our engineers, our hosts in the chat rooms, and all of our chat participants at bbsradio.com. And please go check out Lorraine Moret's material here, geoscientist, independent geoscientist, and we're going to have her and Lawrence back another time. Good night, everyone.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.